Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Best of Interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Every Wednesday at 4 during football season, we are joined by our Odyssey NFL insider, Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider Call is brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. What's up, Baldy?
Hey guys, how are you, man? I'm like everybody else, looking forward to week 7, putting week 6 in the books here and looking to move ahead, man.
Did I see, now to put football aside for one second, did I see that you were at the Sphere in Las Vegas? Did I see that online?
Well, I did the Raiders game.
Okay.
You know, the Eagles were playing on Saturday night, but I was doing Texas OU on Saturday. I figured, Raiders on Sunday made a lot of sense to me, so it was a good double-double last week.
Okay.
Wow.
So, as a music guy, very excited to, at some point, get to Sphere for a show.
Oh,
so.
You got to go. You got to go, Spike. It's awesome, man. I saw U2 at the Sphere during the Super Bowl a couple years ago. Man, it was something else.
Yeah, it looks amazing. Friend of mine went to, anyway, no more Sphere talk. Football talk. All right, yeah. Here we go. I'm getting the face from Jack. So, you know. The big word this week in Philadelphia has become predictability, right? So I saw a couple of your breakdowns about a few different Eagles plays. I think they were all third down pass plays.
Yeah.
How much of an issue? So we have mixed signals, right? We have a couple of players saying that it's an issue. We have people like you saying it's an issue. We talk to Jordan Mailata every week. He swears we're just not playing well. This is an execution issue. How big of an issue do you see it as?
Play design. I mean, it's always players over plays, but, design is important too. I mean, you look at some of these offenses and the way they're clicking right now, and there's a lot of good design to it. The Eagles aren't, they're very good in the red zone. There's a lot of good play design there. They're the best in the league at designing red zone plays right now when they get down there. They're not down there enough right now. But it's an issue. It's definitely an issue. And, the way teams are playing the Eagles defensively, they're just sitting in these clouds right now. And they're just sitting on top of these zones, and they're keeping everything in front of them. And, if you kind of run the same type plays at them, it becomes a matchup zone where it becomes man at a certain distance. And they're just sitting on top of these routes. Or there's nothing that's, making their eyes go in a different direction between pre-snap motions or anything. It's pretty simple. And so it's mirrored routes, same routes on one side as the other, and you give a giant defensive core a chance to sit down on these routes. A bad secondary like the Giants are, they're not going to get fooled by anything, and they didn't.
I guess it's hard for us, Baldy, on the outside, and I would imagine even for yourself, to know why the concepts don't have a little bit more complexity to them. I'm just wondering, Is this an offense that's being suited and catered to Jalen and his skills or what the offensive players do there? Or is this just what the Nick Sirianni / Kevin Petullo offense is going to be like, and we just have to perfect that?
Mm. That's a good question. I don't really have the answer to it. I was just doing, like, some research. Because I always think, like, this offense, you have the best running back in football. Like, why would you run RPOs? Why would you do some of the things other teams do when you have the best back? Either give it to them or go play action off it, you know, which they don't do a lot of. But I would say that if you have the best back in football, they've got to get better at running the ball. Not just better at it, Ike.
Mm-hmm.
Like, last year, 26% of his runs went for a yard or less. All right? You know, that's a quarter of his runs. But, mm-hmm. you know, he made up for it with all the big runs. This year, 40% of his runs, 95 runs so far, 40% of them are going for a yard or less. There's just too many negative runs or runs where aren't productive. And that is between him and the offensive line. And I think that is as big an issue as anything in the passing game right now.
Okay.
Because teams just aren't really, they don't have to do much. I mean, you watch Kayvon Thibodeau just squeeze on Mulata. You watch the backside cave in. Like, you know, they had six of their 12 runs. Didn't gain more than a yard last week against the Giants for Saquon. That's too high of a percentage.
Yeah, I saw another number that this is, in terms of getting hit before the line of scrimmage, this is Saquon's getting hit before the line of scrimmage at the second highest rate of his career.
Well, and that's who I'm speaking of, Spike. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
that makes sense.
And for perspective for everyone listening, Saquon played behind some bad offensive lines in New York, you know?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be better here.
Yes, it's supposed to be better here. So how do you fix this? Such a weird thing to say, because there is the injury and there is one different player, but I guess we're all just trying to figure out, from a team that went, even if Becton's not here.
Yeah, has the line declined?
Yeah, from such a high point last year to such a low point this year. I can't figure out how that happens.
Well, I mean, the left guard is new in there last week, and so that's a big decline from a healthy, you know, Dickerson. So, you know, Landon hasn't been healthy all year from the surgery and the preseason all the way through. So he's been out in and out of the line. So that's they're not as good at moving the line of scrimmage. So if you're not good at really knocking guys off the ball, there's other ways to run the ball. I mean, you can angle block, you can pull, you can fold. There's other ways to get the job done. And so I feel like they've got to start experimenting with some different styles. The power game has not been anywhere near what it was a year ago when Mulata and Dickerson were just caving in one side of the line and Mekhi Becton was pulling, and or they'd run, you know, some counter trays with Lane and the tight end. I mean, those plays are almost non-existent right now. So, I mean, I think they got to find some different ways to run the football, and there are. I mean, I don't see any, you know, Mulata and Lane Johnson run as well as any tackles in this league, and I don't see them out there running toss pack and letting those guys get on the perimeter. And so I feel like they've got to change their approach a little bit here.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about the offense. Defense did not look great on Thursday either. And it's sort of two things. It is from a cornerback issue. There's an issue at CB2, but they're also not getting to the quarterback. You know, we've been talking about perhaps trading for an edge. Now that N'Kobe Dean is back, do you think the team should give any thought to perhaps putting Dean in there and letting Jihad Campbell do a little more edge work, and maybe they're able to get some push there?
Well, I mean, he showed that at Alabama, that he could come off the edge, you know, at times. I think he's got a great takeoff. I think he could give him some pass rush. It's certainly a need right now. They're not getting to the quarterback. They're having a blitz to do it. But I don't, you know, there could be a package for that, Spike, where N'Kobe's back there was Bond, and you know, you let Campbell come off the edge with his speed and good first step. You know, I mean, I think that's a possibility, but I don't know if that's a steady diet.
Yeah.
That's going to make a big difference. Now, they missed Nolan Smith a great deal. I don't know when he gets back, but, I mean, his speed and playmaking ability off the edge, you know, was paramount. But, you know, there's a lot of problems. I mean, Zadarius, you know, walking away from the game right now, it doesn't help them. They don't have good edge rushes. They're probably going to have to make a move here, I would think. You know, they're not taking the ball away. Like, they had 13 takeaways in four postseason games to win the Super Bowl. They're not taking it away right now. And obviously they have a real issue at corner, you know, whether Quinion's in there or not in there right now.
I got two questions for you, Baldy. First, are you hearing anything through your travels and your connections about Zadarius's decision to retire, other than he's, I'm assuming, just doesn't want to play football anymore? In other words, we've been trying to figure out, you know, why come back if you're going to retire in such a short time afterwards? Are you hearing anything?
No, it caught me off guard, to be honest with you. Like I remember I did the Rams-Eagles game a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and I've known Zadarius a long time. He's a great guy. He's got a smile on his face every day, upbeat guy. And, you know, I was just talking to somebody. He came, jumped on top of me, and gave me a big hug, whatever. That's Zadarius. Like, it shocked me because it looked like, because he had other places to go, Ike. Mm-hmm. He told me this. He could have, but he was waiting for the right, and he thought the Eagles were the right place. It's been a while since he's been on a really competitive team. And so I thought this was, and he had a great first game, you know, when they brought him in and made a bunch of plays.
Mm-hmm.
And then he walks away from the game. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see, you know, injuries, like, you know, being the cause or desire to play. Like, I never saw any of that from him. So
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's at stake there.
Now, we're hearing that Jalen Carter was out at practice. They don't know how much he practiced or not, but he didn't play in the last game because of a heel injury. Hasn't really had a signature moment yet this year, Baldy. What are you seeing with Jalen that he hasn't necessarily been as impactful as we've seen in the past with him, as we've become accustomed to?
Well, don't sugarcoat it here. Like, don't sugarcoat it. I mean, he's been awful. I mean, I haven't seen anything.
Straight from the hip. Before. Shoot it from the hip, Dan. Shoot it.
I mean, I'm just telling you, like, he hasn't made one play. He hasn't shown any violence out there. He doesn't look like he's in great shape. He's a guy that had played last year. In a couple of games, he played every snap.
Every snap, yeah.
Every snap. Like, you know, you don't see defensive tackles. I mean, you see Max Crosby doing the edge. You don't see tackles do that.
Yeah.
And he played every snap in some games last year. Whether he had to or not, he did.
Yep.
You don't see the conditioning. You don't see the violence. You don't see him splitting double teams. Like, he hadn't done anything, in my mind, to, you know, I mean, he was an ascending player. We thought he would be a dominant player. He doesn't look anything like that right now. So, you know, I don't know what's going on there, but he's not been the same player. Now, I know the shoulder's been bothering him, the heel. He looks like he's a little chunky, you know. So, the defensive coordinator's kind of called him out on that a little bit. So, there's a lot of time to get going here, but he needs to get going soon.
Yeah.
Because they need him to be really good, to be anywhere near a good defense.
Yep.
What are we looking at on Sunday with this Vikings team, Baldy? They're a team, honestly, that has been out of my vision, you know. They seem like a mid-pack team. What do we have to worry about most, aside from, I guess, Justin Jefferson on Sunday against the Vikings?
Well, I mean, Carson's been in there the last 3 weeks, and he's played pretty good, to be honest with you. I think he's really taken the coaching. He's made a lot of big plays for him. And he's playing well. Now, maybe J.J. is back in there. If he is, he is. But he doesn't scare me. But they've got an elite receiving core because Jordan Addison is back to go with Justin Jefferson, to go with Jalen Naylor, to go with the tight end. Now, Aaron Jones has been out, but Jordan Mason has been just as good. And so they've got a good running game. Defensively, now they led the league in takeaways a year ago. They're not anywhere near that right now this year. They've had some injuries. Andrew Van Ginkle, Blake Cashman, some of those guys have been out. But it is it's a defense led by Brian Flores that really started this whole blitz zero look where they're walking six, seven, eight guys up the line of scrimmage. And they're really going to challenge your protections and what you're going to do if they all come. And sometimes they back out. And they won't do it just on third down. They'll do it on first down. So they really challenge it. They haven't been as good this year against the run. They were great last year. But they haven't been quite as good this year, which is a little mystery because Javon Hargrave is in there. Jonathan Allen is in there. They thought they were going to get better up front. But teams have gashed them pretty good right now. So they're sort of a mixed bag, but they've got playmaking ability on both sides of the ball. I know that.
All right, Baldy. We appreciate you as always. We will talk to you next week, same place, same time. Thank you, Baldy.
All right, brother.
Yep. You too, man.
There is Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider Calls brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial need, Nationwide is on your side.
Welcome back. It is the Midday Show. Sports Talk on 94 WIP presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Our next guest, Ross Tucker at Ross Tucker NFL. You can watch him on CBS calling NFL games on Sundays. Ross, how are we doing today?
Ross. Guys, I am fantastic. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty matter of fact, I heard you a little bit last night, Ross. Good job, man. I mean,
Thank you.
Just,
but, you know,
just
woke up from a nap.
And I was like, damn, Ross gonna be on with us tomorrow. That's a long ride. That's
because, yeah, I get home after like 2, but then I had to get up and do my podcast and all my stuff this morning. So I just slept from like 10:15 to 12:15. So if anything big happened over the last 2 hours, I didn't notice.
No, just us yelling about the Eagles and the quarterback, you know, and the normal stuff here. Ross, all right, let's talk through the Eagles situation. They're 4-2, which is obviously a fine place to be, but it hasn't looked right, and now they've dropped 2 straight. Ross, when you watch the Eagles' offense, because right now they're 5th worst in the NFL in yards per play, like, what is standing out the most to you on why this thing is just not working right now?
It's so funny because, and I know nobody listening ever wants this answer, but there are teams that you watch where it just feels like everything's clicking. And I'll give you an example. On my power rankings on the Ross Tucker podcast today, I have the Indianapolis Colts number one in the NFL.
Wow.
I mean, think about that.
Wow, yeah.
But when you watch them, everything is just working. Everything is clicking. When you watch the Eagles, it feels like they take turns making mistakes. Sometimes it hurts not throwing it to the open receiver or missing an open receiver. I don't think we've seen that many drops, but we've seen some drops. You know, I think the offensive line has taken a pretty decent step back. You know, and it's not just the left guard position. You know, I think people lose sight of the fact sometimes that guys are banged up, but I think Mailata has taken a step back, and I love Mailata. You know, I don't think Juergens is fully 100% from that back surgery. I can speak to that. I had a back surgery in 05 and did not feel – no, I'm sorry. You know, 05 and did not feel better until really 06. The whole 05 year, you know, I was still playing, but I just kind of felt stiff, and I was legitimately concerned that I would never feel all the way good again, if that makes sense. So I don't know what he's going through. You know, you'd have to ask him. But it's pretty clear that each guy is taking turns making mistakes. And also, you know, that's how I look at it, Joe, because I know there's all this stuff out here about the offense being predictable and this and that, and everybody's going after Petullo. And I totally get that, and I'm sure that that's part of it too. I mean, there have been some play calls I haven't liked and whatever. But I guess I'm just conditioned as a former player. I never wanted to give the coaches that much credit when things were going well, so I didn't give them that much blame when things were going poorly. I see a bunch of players, really, quite frankly, both sides of the ball, not making the plays or doing the things they need to do for the team to have success.
Rushy, that last part you mentioned, the predictable part, because we've heard it all over the place, and some players are acknowledging that. And I heard Saquon Barkley after the game basically scoff at the notion they're predictable and say everyone knew we were going to run the football last year, and it didn't matter. From your perspective, both in how you evaluate the game now and when you played, how big of a deal is it if the defense has a sense of what's coming versus, hey, if the offense is on the ball and they're good, it doesn't matter. They're going to win because they're better. Because it felt like Saquon was saying, hey, we ran it a lot last year. Everyone knew it was coming and they couldn't stop us.
Well, everybody knows they like to run inside zone, and they still typically kill people with it. So that's, I think, where Saquon's coming from, and that's a big part of it. You know, these teams would have two safeties in the box, or at least one safety in the box, totally geared up. And if you remember last year, at times running the ball would be like bashing their head into a wall, and then all of a sudden Saquon would go for 80, you know, and it kind of skews all the stats and the numbers. He would just break one. It's funny that you say that, Joe, because when I do speaking engagements, I always bring up Ray Lewis, because he's the best player I ever played against. And the thing I mention to people is I started for the Bills down in Baltimore in 04. Joe, I'm telling you, it might have been half our plays he called out before the play. Half our plays. You know, and I'd come over to the sideline. This is before they could have video or whatever. They would just show you these Polaroid pictures. Gosh, that makes me sound old, but you, that's what it was
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I remember
you get the
stapled together and you flip
through.
Yeah, stapled
together right before the play and then right after. So, Joe, we were supposed to run like a sweep to the right. and I'm supposed to block Ray Lewis. I'm center. He's middle linebacker. I come off the sideline. Our offensive line coach is like, Tuck, you got to get Ray. And I'm like, let me see the pictures. When I snapped the ball, guys, he was a yard outside of the tight end, a yard off the line of scrimmage. And I handed it back to the coach. I was like, you guys better call some different formations or some different motions. And he looked at it, he goes, oh, shoot. Yeah, you're right. So that is a real thing. It's really hard in the NFL. Usually people don't have it, which is why I was blown away by how prepared Ray Lewis was. So there is something to that. If the Eagles have very, very strong tendencies and the defensive players are getting a jump on what they're doing as a result, that can absolutely be a thing in the NFL. Although I also know that there are some coaches, they don't mind if they have a tendency that's in the 80, 85, sometimes 90 percentile, because they think they're going to get you with big plays when they do the other 10% and they run a pass off of it. That's the thing I've seen from guys I respect that have really done in-depth studies, whether it's Orlovsky. I saw Kurt Warner said this, that, you know, I think there's some school of thought that perhaps the Eagles don't have enough plays off of their base plays, their strong tendencies, to really make teams pay. In other words, if they're running certain runs a lot out of certain formations, they're not running the play action pass off the exact same look and taking advantage of it with big explosive plays to counter their tendencies.
Yeah, basically, you said that, I'm thinking of what Kyle Shanahan seems to do, right? That's how they generate a lot of
unbelievable. And Ross, if you remember, that was the Indianapolis Colts when Peyton Manning was
and
the quarterback.
And guess what? You know, you mentioned that Bears game I did last night. Thoroughly impressed. Actually, I'll say both of them. Kingsbury and Ben Johnson. The Bears are running under, you know, Caleb Williams is under center. They're running play action, and he looks light years better than he did last year. He wasn't perfect last night, but, you know, here's the thing. It's never really been a big staple for the Eagles. My guess is it's not something Hurts is entirely comfortable with because he didn't do it in high school or college or whatever. But Hugh can speak to this, okay, Joe? If you run an under center play action pass, okay, especially under center, as an offensive lineman, I'm not really pass blocking. I run block for the first second and a half, and then Hugh, he has to honor the run. You know,
every
for that
time.
First second and a half, he has to honor the run. So what does that mean? By the time he figures out it's a pass, most guys don't have great transition rushes. That's really hard to do, to play run for a second and a half, and then transition to pass rush. The linebackers step up. So every time you see Jared Goff hitting Amon-Ra St. Brown or Jamison Williams or Sam Laporta for these deep in cuts deep down the field, or you see it with the Bears, it's usually under center play action. Now, the Eagles, they just don't do it very much. They're not going to just make it up in the middle of the season. Maybe they could put something in during the bye. But that is a very valuable tool that a lot of NFL teams utilize a lot.
Ross, two-part question. We found out yesterday during our show, out of nowhere, that Za'Darius Smith is retiring. He's been here for 5 games. I thought he gave the Eagles good snaps. I've always been a fan of the player, but he's out after 11 years in the league. So the Eagles now are without him. Ross, two-part here. One, do you think they need to go add an edge from somewhere, whether it be a trade or another guy off the street? And do you think Jahad Campbell, as N'Kobe Dean is now back, can give them some of those snaps off the edge?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
So, I understand why everybody wants them to add an edge guy. The point I would make is more than likely, any edge guy that they sign, right, that guy is going to be basically a guy like Josh Uche or Aziz Ojulari with a different name. I mean, you're not getting TJ Watt. Yeah, you're not getting Myles Garrett. You're going to get a guy that has had a good year or two before in his career, or he's a mid-level guy. Nobody's giving you their best guy. Now, the only caveat I would point to that is the Cincinnati Bengals really like to save money. And if they lose a couple more games and they realize they're out of this, by the way, they don't realize that yet, which is why they traded for Flacco.
Right.
They're still trying to stay in this thing. But if the Bengals lose the next couple games, then they absolutely could potentially trade Hendrickson, although he's hurt right now, by the way. I'm doing that game Thursday night, Steelers-Bengals. I don't even know if Hendrickson's going to play. I think, personally, Joe, the better answer is your second answer, your second possible solution. I love the idea when N'Kobe Dean is back in the mix and getting Jahad Campbell into the rotation off the edge. He was a five-star recruit as an edge rusher. He did it his freshman year at Alabama. I know, okay, that he moved to off-ball linebacker the last couple years. Guess who else moved to off-ball linebacker for a couple years in college? Micah Parsons. But he never lost what he had in high school at Harrisburg High. He never lost, you know, and when they did it in the NFL, he was fantastic. I would love to see the Eagles start to increase the usage of Campbell off the edge. He has that type of athleticism. He can do it. And especially if N'Kobe's ready to roll, there are going to be opportunities where they can utilize him in that role.
Yeah, it feels like the best way to get their best 11 on the field. And I'm with you. And when we had him on a training camp, just him sitting next to us, I was like, this guy looks like an edge. I feel like he could do it. Ross, we appreciate you hopping on. I know it's been a long day and night. Thank you. Have a great week, and we'll catch up next time.
Have a good
Sounds great. See you guys.
There he goes. Ross Tucker.
Swing and a broken back. Comebacker. Kirkering knocks it down. Picks it up. Throws wildly home to the backstop. And the season is over. And Kirkering, who had an easy out at first base, the inning was over. But he threw wildly to the plate all the way to the backstop. And the Phillies season has come to an end.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Every Wednesday at 3 through the Philly season, Larry Anderson joins us. And unfortunately, the Philly season is over, so this is our final time with L.A. for the year. L.A., thank you for this one final call for the 2025 season.
You got it. And thank you guys for all your support through the season. It's always enjoyable.
Appreciate it, brother.
We were hoping that this would be a different kind of call on this Wednesday after the last time we talked, but unfortunately it isn't. So I hate to bring up bad moments, but I need to know what was going through your head and your heart as the ball dribbles to Orion Kirkering and he throws the ball away. Like, what is going through your mind when you see that?
Oh, no. I mean, it just, so many things happen. You just like, First of all, I'll be the first to admit I was not a good fielding pitcher. I would do everything I could possibly to get out of the way of any ball. But when it's hit like that, you don't have much choice. You have to try and catch it. And it was such an easy play. And I've butchered balls like that before. But I just thought, oh my God, just seeing Realmuto pointing to first, I'm like, and you just go, why didn't you just throw to first?
Yeah.
But, you know, I truly appreciate, I know it was brought up in the interview with Scott Lauber, an Inquirer, about 93 he brought up, talking about what Mitch went through. And I was talking about how I pitched inning before and I put Mitch in a bad situation. You know, but Mitch stood up and took it. And Ryan did the same thing, which I think you have to do. I mean, some guys might want to skirt around the issue, but in this town you can't. And if you stand up to it and you just own up to it and just say, and like he said, he goes, I just panicked. I panicked. And, you know, when Scott talked about what do you do, I said, well, he can't do anything to change it. I said, you know, it's the last game of the season. It's the last play of the season. He's going to be in his head all year. And he said, how do you get over it? I said, he's got to go out and just do everything he can to be the best Orion Kerkring he can be next year and force everybody to forget about it. And that's all he can do. There's nothing else. And it's just, you know, like I said in the interview, it was like he looked nervous to me. But it's not a bad thing. It's just you have to learn how to how to make those nerves work for you, not against you.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's all you can do. But when it happened, it's like, oh no. But there's nothing you can do. You can't, like, anybody that's perfect, you can say whatever you want. But if you haven't been perfect in your career, then you can't get on him. You can feel bad, you can be upset, you can be frustrated, but it's just, it happens. Those things happen, and you know, you feel sorry for the kid.
Yeah, I think largely I was surprised everybody sort of felt the same way, that you're upset that it happened, but I didn't see this wave of get this guy out of town. I think we were on the air the next day and most people were pretty sympathetic to Kerkring, said, you know, if we score more than one run, we're not in that situation. You know, if Duran doesn't walk a guy in, we're not in that situation. I think people were pretty much in the same place. But then I started to think about what you were talking about. And there have been athletes in many sports who have a moment like that and then lose it, you know, and not yeah. right afterwards, but can never quite get back what they had as an athlete. And I hope that Orion Kerkring is able to put this behind him and power on, because he's got great stuff. You know, the kid's still got a lot of great potential as a relief pitcher.
Yeah. Oh, no question. I mean, his arm, his stuff, and I think it's if nothing else, it's a tremendous learning lesson for him to be able to go out there and almost a couple things. One thing is get it in your head before every pitch, before every, you know, if the ball's kicked back to me, what am I going to do? What, you know, you have to run through things in your head, and it's like a Derek Jeter or a Chase Utley, or thinking ahead when they would make plays, and you go, how could he do that? How could he? But it's because they're thinking ahead. They're putting themselves, allowing for what could happen, and putting themselves in that position to know what they're going to do ahead of time. And I think that's something he'll be able to do. I think the other thing is he'll be able to go out there and go, you know what? Screw you guys. I had a tough go last year, that last game of the season, but I'm going to show you something and take that attitude of I'm going to do it. I'm going to go out here and to hell with everything else. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to show them. And that's all you can do, and make people forget about it.
Yeah. I tell you what I think, LA, I think it's going to be helpful or beneficial to him. The way Topper handled it, him coming off the right. field, his teammates in the clubhouse, how they right. spoke to the media, sort of in defense and having empathy for him. But I also say for us as a fan base in the media, I don't necessarily want to give us a pat on the back or anything, but like Spike said, I don't think most fans and media have put the blunt of that on or Ryan Kirkering. It's almost like we understand and feel where he's coming from and feel bad for him. So I think, at least I hope, that would help him get past this and move past. I know from a individual standpoint, as a competitor, he's going to hold that in because he feel like he let his teammates down. But it certainly should help that we aren't palling on him about the situation. At least I don't think most people are.
No, I think because there's three other guys that they could pile on much more than Kirkering.
Yeah, okay? Exactly.
And I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about. Yes,
for sure. Me, yes. Ike, and Jack. No, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I think that's one thing that so many people come back to. It's like, we wouldn't be talking about this. We wouldn't be talking about the bunt play. We wouldn't be talking about a runner getting thrown out or bad base. We wouldn't be talking about that if things happened the way that we expected them and the players themselves expected things to happen. It changes everything.
So the Phillies lose in the division round just like last year, lose in four games just like last year, though they lose to a really, really, really good team and did show, I think, a different amount of fight even in a loss than they did against the Mets a year ago. When you look back at the season, I guess if you're to encapsulate it, and here's how I feel about the 2025 season, how do you think about it?
I look at it like they had a heck of a year, but I also look at it like we got beat by the best team in baseball. I do. I mean, they proved that. You can't do what we did and not go, well, they beat us, you know. I mean, there were things that we could have done better. But they came out and did what they had to do. They got the big hit when they needed it. They got the pitching. They're starting pitching. We've already seen two games that, you know, in the NLCS that kind of shows the dominance of that pitching staff. And what those starters can do is just, it's amazing. And, you know, maybe with Wheeler healthy, maybe they're not the best team in baseball. Maybe we are.
Yeah.
But that's a big loss for us, I think. And I mean, between that and also with Jose, with Alvarado, mm-hmm. I mean, doing what he did and having that happen, that changes a lot of things too. And so I think you look back and go, we got beat. We could have done some things different, but it still comes down to, you know, to me offensively, you know, you go back to runners in scoring position. We talked about a lot all through this year. 6 for 30 in the four games, or four games.
Four games, yeah.
Yeah. And 6 for 30, that's not really getting it done. And you know, we struggled when we couldn't afford to against a staff like that and against that team. You can't afford to struggle like that. And we did. They beat us. It's just as simple as that. The one thing I would like to say, and I hope I'm not getting off subject, but I mentioned some things with myself, with my broadcasting, and things that have happened in the past. And I mentioned two names that I want to make sure that these aren't two of the people I was talking about. And Dave Dombrowski, who I mentioned that, you know, they might not like what I'm broadcasting, what I'm saying on the air, and John Middleton, our owner. They have been nothing but professional with me, and neither have ever said one thing to me about, I wish you wouldn't say this, or I wish you wouldn't have said, you know, they've been, Dave Dombrowski, I have the utmost respect for, and I honestly believe he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's just done a tremendous job. Everything he does doesn't always work out perfect, but most of what he does has. And so I just wanted to clarify that, to make sure there's no thoughts that, well, they were getting on me or slapping my hand or saying something to me. They were not, absolutely not. So I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
They might feel it in their gut, but they certainly did. Yeah.
they absolutely might.
Yep. So let me ask you this. So looking ahead to next year, know, this team's been in the playoffs four straight years. If I'm to say, LA, there's one thing about, you can change anything about this team. I'm not asking for specific personnel, but there's something about this team that we need to make better for next year. What is that? Like, what are the players? What can you change? Again, not specifically, but what is the, I guess, the skills that they need better for next year to give this team an even better shot?
Bat to ball skills. I think not just bat to ball, putting balls in play,
yeah,
cutting down on the strikeouts, and not, you know, I mean, I thought we did that a lot this year better than we had in the past, but then it's like when we got to the playoffs, it was almost like we got to hit a home run. It's like, no, you don't. You can get a base hit, but it didn't. Our inability to put balls in play at times. I think they need some guys that can hit for average, guys that are consistently ball guys that put the ball in play. I think a couple of guys like that would help a lot.
I know this isn't the guy that you're talking about in terms of a guy that puts the ball in play, but you could see in game two, in the bottom of the ninth, when Castellanos just puts the bat on the ball and it ends up in play and ends up being a double, it just shows the difference between striking out and putting the ball in play in what you can do if you're just trying to get the ball in play. You know, it's things can happen. The guys can throw the ball away. Orion Kerkren can throw the ball into the stands, but he can't do it if you're striking out.
Right.
Yeah.
That's one of my feelings is just, I mean, it's a good team. It's a fearful team, but if the team's struggling, and it's, you know, offensively and at the top where we had a lot of strikeouts, a lot of balls, a lot of hittable balls, and I think they talked about it. You know, we didn't do this. You know, and they're all like, you know, each one to a man was like myself included. You know, we didn't do this, myself included. It's like, yeah, that happened. We didn't put the ball in play near as much as we should have, and not just the home run. But I think that's one thing that I thought that Schwarber did so great this year was putting the ball in play, especially, you know, the first half of the season or throughout most of the season. He was putting the ball in play. He got a lot of RBIs that weren't from home runs. And that's, I think we need more of that instead of thinking about the home. I don't know if they're thinking. I mean, I can't put my mind, I can't say what they're thinking when they get up there. Maybe they were just trying to put the ball in play, but with some of the swings, it doesn't look like it. It didn't look like it to me.
I don't know. Well, 117 days till pitchers and catchers, and we do it all they can.
Looking forward to it.
Go Eagles.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. As I said, 117 days.
We got our own problems over here. Yeah. We got our own problems over here.
Well, thank you as always, LA. I mean, it's awesome having you on the show every week, and this season, absolutely no exception. So thank you for everything for this year. And I don't know. Maybe we'll go get them next year.
Let's not say that again after next year.
Yeah, all right. All right, Alan.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate y'all.
All right, brother.
There he is. Sir. Larry Anderson.
Mike is brought to us by Verizon, the official SG partner. Excuse me, that's 5G. I got my glasses on. 5G partner of the Philadelphia Eagles. Get to your local Verizon store today to check out the latest deals. My glasses on, but not exactly working. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning team. How are you?
Oh, Mike.
Great.
We're looking for uplift. So they really should explore the BG thing, don't you think?
Merrill?
What'd you say?
I said you're looking for uplift. Did you call Merrill?
I haven't called Merrill yet, but he's if you don't do the job, he'll be next on the list. So, Mike, what do you think? BG, I mean, don't you at least kick the tires and find out if he wants to do it?
I think it's hard to, like, unretire from this game. And I know many guys have done it. But once you start to sit home and, you know, drive the kids to school and do all the papa duties that you have to do when you have little ones, I think it's hard. And I don't know if BG has been working out, kind of anticipating this. And if that's the case, then, yeah, it would make sense. But if that's not the case, I think it's hard to unretire, especially – given all that this game asks of you to do.
Yeah. Well, he's got to want it, and he's got to be able to be in shape enough to do it.
Look at this guy that just retired. Now, Za'Darius Smith, he really wanted to play, was working out, getting ready to play. He comes in, and, you know, after a few weeks, and evidently, before he even came back, it was a real question in his head whether or not he was going to do this again this year. And then he decides, you know, my heart's not in it. For whatever reason, he decides that he doesn't want to do it. I just think it's a difficult thing to do.
Okay. Mike,
so much more difficult than is given credit right now. I think it's hilarious that this is just being looked at like, he'll just come back.
Well, it depends whether he's wanted
it. It's not easy like that. It is so impossibly hard to expect him to just do this. I can't even imagine.
John, and the other thing is, if he does, and if they do want BG to come back, what kind of player is he going to be? We're going to expect the BG that we've come to know.
I know he'll be a great leader, what's he going to give you on the field?
Yeah, after all of this time off, what will he be able to give you in terms of what he can do on the field?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's where I'm at. I'm going to give you a math equation. Mike, remember in like fifth grade you get those greater than signs and the lesser than signs? 70% of BG is greater than Ojulari, Uche, and whoever the hell else I've never even heard of. So take that math equation and put it in your pipe.
Mike, what's the biggest area that the team should have focused on over the 10 days to get better, to recover from the two-game skid?
I think the biggest thing that they get out of this is getting some rest and trying to get healthy bodies, because I believe that is the biggest issue with this team, is that they don't have a healthy offensive line. They don't have a healthy enough defensive line. The players that they have, the players that they're counting on, when you don't have those guys healthy, I see the drop-off as being a pretty big drop-off when you have to bring in the substitutes and the guys who are backing these guys up. If you have all of these guys healthy that are the starters, you certainly have a much better chance in each and every game. But I just don't see this team as a healthy team right now, especially in the trenches. And having 9 days as opposed to 6 days recovery, I think that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Lane says we're predictable. What do you say to that?
I say what Barkley said. Yeah, you can be predictable. You know, when Washington was winning and everyone knew exactly what play they were going to run, John, they ran the counter tray or they ran, big Rigo. Mm-hmm. You know what was coming, but because you were so dominant, you couldn't stop it. Last year, teams knew what the Eagles were doing, but they were so physical, they were so dominant that teams couldn't stop it even still.
So when we get the offensive line healthy enough, will Saquon be able to break some chunkers again? Are you watching Saquon and seeing that he's not taking a step back, that he's still Saquon, that it's just the path has not been cleared in front of him? Or is it more to it than that?
I think it's the accumulation of all that he's done in his career, and particularly last season, and the lack of health of this offensive line. I just think it's a matter of what happens in this league. And teams are playing him differently, but with the offensive line healthy, I still think Saquon can be Saquon. You watch the first drive that they had against the Giants when they're moving people around. Yeah, we saw what we wanted to see, and one of those almost broke for a real big one. I think it's a matter of getting these guys up front healthy, because you don't win in this league unless you have healthy big people beating up the other team's big people.
So, Mike, they got an issue at corner. I mean, they already had one. Now they probably are going to have two if Quinyon's out. Should they move Cooper DeJean outside? They haven't wanted to because he's so good inside and probably not as good outside. But should they bump him outside and just attack it that way?
So when you ask me a question like that, I think about Vic Fangio, because I do believe that this guy can really maneuver the pieces on the board to make the best of them, to get the most out of them. And if Vic decides that's the way to go, then I think that's the smartest move for this team, because he looks at these guys every day. He knows the strengths and weaknesses of these guys. I don't know if that's the best position for Cooper DeJean. I know that he is excellent when you play him inside, because of all the skills that he has, because of the athlete that he is. He can do so many things. I don't know if he's the same player. I don't know if he has the same impact on the outside.
Yeah, Mike, if you have to get to a quarterback, you have to pick one player to do it. You get to choose any of our edge rushers. Right now, we have four We have Aziz Ojulari. We have Josh Uche. As Nick said. Jalix Hunt or Patrick Johnson. So you got Ojulari, Uche, Hunt, or Johnson. And it's Uche, by the way.
Can I punt?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. I hope not. If you give me that group of players, I think I'll go with. I think Jalix Hunt or Josh Uche.
Wow.
I think it's between the two.
Well, that's a vote of confidence right there.
There's that's an area where this team has to find a player, and I think Jalix Hunt. Everyone was expecting a little more out of him than he's been able to give.
I'll say.
Patrick Johnson, he's been a backup every year. He's primarily a special teams guy all of his career.
Tough and steady.
Yeah, this is his fifth year, and he hasn't really been anything but primarily a teams guy. That's a tough one. That is probably the area that needs the most help.
So, Mike, it's incredible because you're right. That area needs a ton of help. But let me give you another one. I've never in my life thought this would be an issue to discuss, but it is now, so I'll say it. Can they catch a kickoff? I think it's eight times they've dropped a kickoff. I mean, what the hell?
Yeah, that's scary. When you see your special teams on just the basics, not being able to get you in good field position, that's something that is troublesome. That's scary. And I don't know. You bring in a guy that you're expecting, and Tank Bigsby, that you're expecting to be able to add something to that, and he just hasn't added anything.
Let's find someone else who can do a better job, I guess.
Xavier Gibson, give him a shot.
Sure. So from your perspective, you've seen so much coverage through the years and the way that this game changes. If we can't run the same coverages that we did before because our best cover guys are out, Quinyon Mitchell no longer able to play for a while.
Yep.
Can we zone things off and survive, with Adoree Jackson and Kelee Ringo? Is it that simple? Is it easier for the personnel to do certain coverages that we can specialize in that'll give us a better chance to sort of stay afloat while these guys are getting healed up?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything simple about the passing game that they're going to face with Justin Jefferson coming to town. Jordan Addison is now healthy. Jalen Naylor. They've got ballers on that team. T.J. Hockenson at tight end. They've got some ballers on that team. I believe that when you're in this situation, the best thing is keeping it simple. And if they simply play a two-deep zone and try and keep everything in front of them, I think that's one way to
wait until Carson makes mistakes, and he probably will.
Well, Mike, you know what's so big for this game, man? Because I'm telling you right now, I think Carson's going to get three touchdowns. But it's going to come down to whether he does what Jalen does so well, and that's protect the ball. Because he's probably good for one turnover.
He can wait.
The question is whether you get the two. If you get the interception and the fumble, the Eagles probably win. If you only get one of them, Eagles probably lose. Like, I hate to be so simplistic, but that's the way I'm going to put it. Because I'll tell you this, Mike, Eagles are going to have to score some points. Because with this Eagles defense, I'm no big Carson fan, but, I mean, he can still sling it. He does have a freaking arm.
Well, you're picking him to beat the Eagles.
I am.
You sounds like you're a Carson fan.
Let me tell you this here. Mike, just in case you missed it.
Carson stinks!
But so does frickin' Ringo, Ojulari, frickin' whoever the hell else they
are. Jackson, all those guys.
Those guys are worse. Anyway.
You guys had your coffee this morning, didn't you?
Mike, I'm in a mood, man. I'm in a mood.
Here's the thing, and I'll simplify it even further for you. If you take away Carson's first read, then his feet start to patter and go fast, and all sorts of good things happens for the defense.
Totally. Yeah. And he does
the thing.
And he ducks the head.
Teams didn't know that enough. Like, he's 2-1 right now as a starter. Teams didn't know that well enough to take that first read away well enough
to where he was nervous and that would messing happen. Up. We're going to do it, and we're going to have a chance.
I hope. And, Mike, he still ducks the head, man. I've never seen a quarterback who just takes his it'd be like a running back. Excuse me. It'd be like a basketball point guard who has to look down to dribble. It's like if you're looking down, then you're not looking who to pass the ball
to. Eric Lindros.
Yeah, Eric would skate with his head down, and that's why Stevens got him. You're
totally
right.
Got him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, man, he still ducks. When he's in trouble in traffic, he ducks. And I know a credit to Houdini play versus Washington in 2017 that we properly glorify because it was amazing. But it has caused him a lot of problems as time has gone on. All right, Mike, stay well, my man. You and Merrill and obviously Devin on the call on Sunday. I think we look forward to it, but I hope at the end of the day we did. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll Mike, have fun. Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy. There Thanks, he is, Mike Quick. He joins us every Thursday.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. It's Thursday. It's 4 o'clock, which means we're joined by Mike Mayock. You can hear Mike every week on the Believe in Eagles podcast with Lee Mayock. What's up, Mike? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
What up, Mike?
Mike, do you know it's Ike's birthday?
Man, Ike, is it really? Happy birthday, brother.
Yes, thank you, right?
How old are you, man?
Too old, Mike, too old.
No. Give me a number, brother.
52.
52 is nothing.
Yes.
Are you kidding me? You're a puppy.
Yeah, look at how good he looks for 52.
I appreciate it. Man. I appreciate it.
So, Mike, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Jordan Mailata to start, same question I asked Shio Kapadia. Let's see what your answer is. If given what you are seeing with the Eagles right now, if I were to ask you, give me something that they are doing particularly well that gives me a little optimism moving forward, what would your answer be?
Oh boy, that's not a good question right now.
that is the same answer.
That's consensus answer right there. Yeah.
Even from Jordan. Yeah, that is a. Because, you know, we've talked a little bit about how the league overall, it doesn't seem like there's a dominant team right now. But for most of the good teams, you can look around and say, oh, they're doing this well. The problem with the Eagles that we seem to be finding is that it's hard, you know, defensively or offensively to say here is something that this team is about that they can sort of hang their hat on moving forward.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
We talked several weeks ago when they were undefeated.
Yes.
About how I didn't feel like they had an identity offensively. Right. And I feel the same way now. And you know, they're 4-2 coming off a mini bye. And, you know, I saw a stat the other day, which was kind of frightening, which was, they've been outgained every game this year.
Yep.
Which is only the sixth team in the last 85 years with a winning record that was outgained every game through six. And the other five have collectively zero playoff wins. So it's really not a good benchmark for where the Eagles are today. You know, I break down the film and I look at all that. Sometimes I feel like that's a little bit overwhelming, to talk about, you know, particularly. And I'm getting frustrated because each week I'm seeing the same things. And to be really honest, I think the most important thing to me is that you have to win up front on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And we spent a lot of time with Jalen and the wideouts and Saquon, and why aren't we running the ball? And at the end of the day, I keep coming back to this fact, and that is the Eagles, as much as I love Stout, and I think they will fix it, it is a process, but the Eagles' offensive line played significantly better last year than they have this year. And, you know, if you want to give them a little bit of a pass, you know, Toth is not a starting guard. Steen effectively is a first-year player. Juergens is a third-year player. So the interior line, that's not a lot of seasoning by NFL standards. And again, to be honest, as much as I love the tackles and have more respect for those two tackles, maybe than I've watched all their games, but Mailata and Lane Johnson are not playing up to their standard either. And I think that's the beginning of everything on the offensive side of the line of scrimmage.
Well, and when you say an identity, because we talked on the day of the Giants game, and your what you wanted to see them do was, I don't care if it's we're not working, run the ball. And it's amazing because the first couple of Saquon runs were great. And I said to myself, there it is.
Yeah, here we go.
There it is. And then all of a sudden it disappeared. And it has to be so difficult to establish an identity when you can't do the one thing that has been your identity in the entire, you know, I'm just saying the entire Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni era, the running game has been the thing that they've been able to hang their hat on, and they're just, it doesn't seem like they're able to do it.
Yeah, and Saquon took himself out after that second run. Something happened to him. He was gesturing to his helmet or his eyes or something. And then he didn't come back in. Dylan, I think, went for minus two or three, and then they threw the ball and kicked the field goal.
Yeah.
But, you know, as bad as it all was at halftime, they threw the ball for, I don't know, plus close to 200 yards and had 17 points on the board. They're down three. They don't score another touchdown. They ran the ball three or four times in the second half for like 5 yards. And again, I don't understand who they are and what they're trying to do, but I do believe in the people in charge. That's what I hope for.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time talking about that offense and that offensive line, Mike. You know, one of the things that helped them be as good as they were last year and really stay committed to a running game, even when things weren't going well, is that their defense played so much better last year. It started up front for them. And this year, I just don't see where they're getting anything from this defensive line from a production standpoint. Other than Jordan Davis in those first few games, it just feels like we're not getting any big plays up front. And with Za'Darius Smith abruptly retiring, I mean, that just hurts the depth on this line, which it really couldn't afford to have.
Yeah, and I think you're getting to the heart of what dynamic, the term dynamic means on defense. It's usually generated by your defensive line, whether it's hitting the quarterback, pressuring the quarterback, getting him off the spot, sacking the quarterback. But it typically leads to dynamic plays for your defense. And the Eagles aren't getting that. They're not getting the turnovers. They're not getting the big plays on defense. It's tough with against the Giants. No Jalen Carter, no Nolan Smith. Quinyon Mitchell goes out early. That's okay. That's tough. I get it. But the dynamic plays are not there. We talked about the two offensive tackles not playing to their standard. Even Jalen Carter, when he's played this year, I don't think he's played to his standard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, early in the year, Vic was talking about how, you know, he was coming off some stuff in camp and they had to get him in shape, but he's playing over 90% of the snaps. And you know, the Eagles need more from him as far as dynamic plays are concerned. Because if they don't get it from him, I don't think they're going to get it from anybody until Nolan Smith comes back.
Former GM Mike Mayock, you've been around this business a long time, Mike. We get around this time of the year, you get close to the trade deadline, we're trying to figure out how do you improve the team. And I'm assuming from your viewpoint, You have to decide at some point, is the team worth the investment or reinvestment of going out and trying to acquire players via trade, giving up draft capital, what have you. Where you see the Eagles at right now, we're three or four weeks away from that trade deadline. You still feel like this is a team that you would be willing to invest in if there's a trade out there that could upgrade this roster somewhere, particularly on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I do. It has to make sense, I think. Big picture, Ike, as far as what you're trying to do next year and the year after also. Every once in a while you can just say, nah, forget it, I'm going to go get somebody, and if it's a one-year rental for 6 weeks, that's okay. Right,
yep.
And that is okay if you're in that position. I don't think the Eagles know or we know what position they're going to be in at the trade deadline. This season could go one of two ways. It could go the way of the 23 team. It could go the way of the 24 team.
Yeah,
and that's kind of scary. So I don't think all the pieces are in place yet for Howie. But the one thing I would tell you about Howie, because I know it personally, is he's making more phone calls, and I've told you guys this, than any GM in the league, and he's doing it now, and he's out there banging out there looking for those two positions, and if something makes sense, he'll pull the trigger.
Mike, one more, just to jump back to the offense for a second. There has been so much conversation on the air, online, with the players about the predictability issue or if that is an issue on offense. Do you think that is something that is holding them back in that they are doing the same things at the same times? Or is it more that they're putting themselves in situations where that ends up being the case?
I think there's different definitions of predictability, and I'm gonna bring Ike in on this too, because Ike and I were both defensive players, okay?
Yep.
So I always used to think what made me uncomfortable as a defensive player or made our defense in general uncomfortable, and it typically was things that made you think more, okay?
Yeah.
For instance, motion, change of strength of the offense,
yeah,
resetting personnel. That's one way that you've got to think more. If you just line up in a static position offensively, we don't have to think on defense. We got our coverages and we're ready to roll. You change the strength, all the fits change in the run game, everything changes. That's point number one. Number two, an occasional gadget play. Like, you know, you can't just let the backside of the defense chase Saquon down every snap. And they have had an occasional gadget play, but you've got to have something that's a double pass or the Nick Foles play in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Or you've got to have something where the players kind of look forward to practice it, and at the right time, a good play caller can call it. And what's interesting is I watched the Minnesota tape last week, and they ran a gadget play for a touchdown, double pass, you know, from I forget who it was, the wide out or the tight end threw it, I forget who it was. And you know, they also go no huddle, which, and that's the third thing, Ike, that I think makes which makes defenses get nervous.
Yes.
No huddle tempo. Uh-oh, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. Who's our personnel? Are we ready? Can we get set up and go? Mm-hmm. Even if the offense slows it down at the line of scrimmage, you still get the defense thinking more. So in my mind, these are simple things. You're not really changing much in the infrastructure of your offense. You can add some motion. You can add some movement. You can go up tempo. You can throw a gadget in there or two. You can mix up your personnel.
Yeah.
These are all things that keeps us as defensive players off the field, and I don't think they're major changes to what you want to do offensively. So, I mean, that's how
I totally agree with you. It also puts a defense on his heels, so it makes us a little more hesitant versus we're playing downhill and we're playing fast. We have to, like you said, the thinking part of it as a defense, the less you have to think, the more instinctive and more reactive you can be as a player. The more you have to think, yeah, that's never good on the defensive side of the football. And that's why guys like McVay, Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan, those guys are such great play designers because they give you all of the pre-snap stuff to try to confuse a defense. And like you said, you can even mix up tempo And that doesn't allow a defense to change personnel. It lessens communication, so it can cause confusion on the defensive side of the ball. And that's really what you want as an offense, is a blown coverage or a missed assignment that you can take advantage of. And that's what we're not doing as an offense, presenting it to defenses. We really are allowing defenses to really just play without really giving them a lot to think about.
That is so well said. And on top of all of that, you mentioned several guys. I would throw in Andy Reid.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Coach. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
I'd throw in Andy. I'd throw in John Gruden. And the amazing thing is the common denominator from all those guys offensively is, even though they've got all the French pastry and it looks fancy, at its basic, it's just a basic offense.
Still the same.
With a core of plays. They don't have a lot of plays. They just do them really well.
Yep.
So Vikings on Sunday, what are we running into here? What do, aside from, you know, Justin Jefferson, obviously a great player, what do the Eagles have to worry about on both sides of the ball on Sunday in this game?
I think it's a really tough offense, a really tough challenge for the Eagles offense, because I've known Brian Flores for years. He's a Boston College guy, and he's like the king of simulated pressure.
Uh-oh.
So you're going to see 6, 7, 8 guys salivating at the line of scrimmage, and you have no idea which 4 or 5 are coming. They're number 2 in the NFL, both in pressure rate and blitz rate, which is one of the worst things the Eagles have done this year. They've allowed a 40% pressure rate this year. So their strength, the Vikings' defensive strength, is a Philadelphia weakness. They're number 2 in third downs allowed. They're only allowing 30%. I think the Eagles were 1 for 9 last week. So they're giving up 19 points a game, which is 4th or 5th best in the league. So defensively, they're really solid. They do things really well that will give the Eagles problems. The flip side of the ball, yeah, you're right. They've got really good wideouts. They've got a good tight end in Hockenson. They run the ball well. Carson Wentz will probably get the start, I'm thinking, this week. And I think their head coach fits in with the other guys that Ike and I were talking about.
Kevin O'Connell, yeah.
Kevin O'Connell is one of the guys that really makes quarterbacks comfortable. And I'm talking about all year round, and especially on Sundays. So he brings the best out in his quarterbacks. I think it's going to come down to some turnovers like usual. The Eagles were -2 in turnover differential. You know, the last 2 weeks, the Eagles have gotten beat the same way, basically. I mean, they've had 2 young quarterbacks not throw the ball, but run the ball, scramble really well, effectively against them. They've had 2 teams run the football right up their butt. You know, they've given up, you know, they've had 2 teams run it 30 and 39 dimes for over 4.5 yards a pop. So it sometimes, Spike, it gets frighteningly simple. You know, they got to stop the run. They can't let Jefferson go wild. And I think it's a tough matchup for their offense.
Well, great to hear. Great to hear. All right,
well,
Mike.
Hey, Spike, here's the last thing. Based on what I told you last Thursday,
yes.
Be very optimistic, because I missed on everything.
Well, but I think
we all did.
Yeah, everybody said the same thing. Yeah. Everybody said to themselves, well, how is this Giants offense with a rookie quarterback, with neighbors hurt, how are they going to score any points? And then 30 points later with Cam Scataboo, you know, running all over us. I don't think he's a good player, but I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Yep.
All right, Mike, thank you as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate it, brother.
Thanks.
There he is, Mike Mayock.
Coach Vermeil, how you doing this fine Friday morning?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Yeah, I'm good. Doing okay.
Thanks, Dick. So, Dick, a ton to do on the Eagles, but let me just ask you one Phillies-related question. I'm taking a beating here today because people think I'm too soft on the Phillies. You, as someone who coached over decades, knows that it's very hard to win, and sometimes you win it all, and usually you don't. Can you put some perspective to the many listeners right now on the degree of difficulty to win it all and how the struggle is so painful when you don't, and the whole emotional edge? Because everyone's mad at me for not being harder on the Phillies, but I'm trying to tell people it's not easy to win it all. Your thoughts?
Well, first off, they did a great job of getting there, you know. But as I said last week, when the best gets versus the best versus the best in the game, and the pitching is as good as it was to get and be the best and be in that ball game more often than not. And I'm no baseball statistician, but more often than not, they shut down the better hitters in the league. You know, regardless of how many home runs they've been hitting and all that, they aren't going to consistently do that through four or five games against the best pitching in the league. That's why those pitchers make so much money.
For sure.
You know, it's just, you know, this city is one of the greatest sports cities, maybe the best sports city in the country, all right? And I've been around. But losing hurts them more than any other city, especially when the expectations are so great. They almost take the fact that they're going to win for granted. You know, you still have to play the game, you know? And it's tough. And this city loves their football team. And they get mad at them when they don't perform like they think they ought to. But they had a hell of a year. They won a ton of baseball games.
Yeah, they did. So, Coach, let's get to the Eagles here. And I'm going to ask you the same question. I think I've asked just about every guest we've had this week. How concerned are you about our football team, the Eagles?
Well, I'm concerned as probably just as much or not as probably not, no. Not as much as the coaches are, you know. But, you know, our coaching staff has proved they know what they're doing, okay? And I have confidence the team will get better. Will they be what they were? Probably not, okay? Probably not. When you compare them today, what they were last year at the end of the year, there is no comparison, okay? Mm. But I do believe the quality of our coaching staff, you know, all the way through every assistant football coach will improve this football team, and they'll get some guys back that are banged up, but they aren't going to be what they used to be. It's going to be very tough.
So we're playing our former quarterback in Carson Wentz, and he's sort of had a little bit of a resurgence because he's getting rid of the ball and letting the offense work for him, something that he struggled to do while he was here, Coach. What do you see from Carson Wentz, and how concerned should we be that he actually has the goods to give us a run for our money this weekend?
Well, you know, all through the league, the cast-off quarterback has been playing very well in the situation he is in now, okay? Mm. It's amazing. Last year, Minnesota did an unbelievable job with a quarterback, made him a lot of money. Now he's playing very well and on another team. You know, some teams just have better luck with quarterbacks. And I'm not going to say better coaching, because sometimes there's a lot of variables in that. But some head coaches, some offensive schemes just are more conducive to producing a quarterback that can play better than he has been playing. And I think he'll play well. Their offense is not as good as it was last year. Their defense is a lot better than it was last year, Minnesota. So it'll be a tough football game. My computer says we're going to lose by one. I kind of believe we'll go there and beat them. I really do. Because I think, you know, our coaching staff, our players are so used to winning. And I think the fact that they've lost two in a row will be a great motivating force. Now, Minnesota's coming out of a bye week. So that'll be good for their offense and Carson Wentz. And maybe I read where their fast starting quarterback was starting to take some reps as well. It'll be a good football game, but I really believe our Eagles will be better than they've been playing.
The simulated basically zone blitzes have really given us problems where they – you know, do the seven guys milling around at the line of scrimmage. Brian Flores, we know he's going to blitz. We know he's going to do those zone simulated pressures. How concerned are you, Coach, about the way we have really struggled to protect our quarterback when we try to pass it?
Well, there's no question we're struggling there, but I'll tell you this, those zone blitzes can't stop good running games. Okay.
Ah, I love that.
A defensive lineman starting to drop out cannot have as much weight on his hand to take on an offensive blocker, the quality of our team. And I think if they do a lot of it, it'll help our running game.
I'm not a
big zone blitz fan, okay? And coaches do a good job against zone blitzes. We haven't had a lot of luck, but we haven't had a lot of luck against anything right now.
No,
they haven't. I think if we run the ball well, we'll control those zone blitzes.
Coach Vermeil with us right now, as he is every Friday at this time. Coach, let's talk about Brandon Graham. I've been saying all week I think the Eagles should sign him if he is interested in playing and in, you know, good enough shape to be able to step in there. With the depletion at that position and lack of production, and your many years of experience where you see players walk away and sometimes still have something left in the tank, based on what you saw from Brandon last year, would you sign him?
I might, yeah. It depends on how desperate I am. I don't know the roster, okay? If I knew the roster real well, I know this. I'm going to bring this up again. In 1979-80, I signed a 34-year-old guy, and he got 14 sacks. The next year at 35, he got 15 sacks. Vaughn Humphrey, okay? Yep. It's amazing when you've been really good and you take good care of your body and then come back and really go to work, you can still play well. All players played longer in the old days because they didn't get paid as much money, so they couldn't retire, and they played longer. And I really believe a lot of older players can play extremely well if they're willing to work harder than they've ever worked before. And Brandon Graham is one of those kind of guys. You know,
I agree.
He has no limitation on his commitment to the game.
And Dick, just to give you some context on the roster, Rhea, what's the reality? Is it one sack by an edge rusher this year?
One. Yeah, outside, you know, Patrick especially Johnson with Zadarius gone.
I mean, Coach, think about that. Yeah. We're six games into the season. Those guys collectively have one sack on the outside. That's a disaster.
Well, you know, if anyone can fix it and make it better, and not dramatically better, is our defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio.
Sure.
One knows more about what to do with the defense than he does. Okay, nobody. So I believe if we play well on offense, you know, play well on offense and go in there, our defense will handle the issue and say, okay, keep the game close enough for us to win.
Coach, let's get to your prediction. So we heard you allude to the computer has it, the other team by a point. Sounds like you're leaning toward the Eagles. Why? Are you leaning toward the Eagles, and why?
Because they haven't played up to their ability. Even though they aren't what they used to be, they're better than they are. Okay? They have dropped off dramatically, offensively, from what they were. And they're not that bad. I just don't believe they are. And I believe they'll get going. And they've proved they can do that in the past. I just believe they'll get better. Even against a better defense. Minnesota is playing better defense this year than they were last year. You know, yeah, the bye will help Minnesota as well.
It sounds like you say the run will help diffuse the zone pressures.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like you think Saquon will have some success this week, Coach?
If they give him any kind of room at all. And you got to be careful. All coaches have to be careful of giving up on the run because the first two running plays only make 6 yards. First off, we're spoiled. You know, what we did with the running guy, we're spoiled. That, we may never see that again, okay?
Yep.
But you can't give up on the run, especially with a guy like him. You don't have to block everybody if you give him the ball, especially when he's behind the quarterback.
The best of interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.